so welcome to the portfolio committee of police. Also welcome General Cruiser and his team from SAPS and the media and other members of the public. As we've indicated that we focus today on the SAPS statistics, maybe just a few issues before we start. Honourable members, just there's one change to our program next week. The National Assembly is sitting next Tuesday morning for the adoption of all the reports from 10 o'clock in the morning. So we plan to invite the SAPS transformation task team, so that meeting will be postponed to a further date. So there will be no portfolio committee next week due to the sitting of the House itself. So the only meeting next week will be on Wednesday, the 7th of June, and that will be briefing by petitioners to Parliament and the Department. I think there's four petitioners on the need for police stations and satellite stations in certain areas in South Africa, and then also briefing by IPET on the Section 9 reports, as well as referrals that the PC on police sent to IPET to follow up. And that will be followed up in the week of the 14th of June by briefing by SAPS and CPS on their third and fourth quarterlies. So I just want to bring it to the attention of the Honourable members. Honourable Mbele.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a quick request, if I may. If I recall correctly, the parts of the Tuesday meeting was also intended to get a briefing from the Minister in terms of the SAPS IPED issue. Which from what I've seen in the media is escalating in terms of litigation. So I wonder if it's possible to make a request to the Minister, if I know there's normally cabinets on Wednesdays, if there's a chance perhaps that at least the Deputy Minister could just come and give the committee a brief progress update on what's happened, what's other possible plans, because I just think we can't lose the momentum on that as the committee and keeping it on our radar.
Thank you, member. We note that. Of course, we will have to again communicate with the Office of Ministry about his availability, but of course, as soon as he's ready, we will ensure that he's at the committee. No problem, we'll do that. Thank you, members. Maybe just a few issues that is in the public domain. I just want to refer to that before we start with the introductions. The committee noted that yesterday 8 alleged corrupt police officers were arrested at the Kulila port entry in KZN, and they were arrested on alleged cases of corruption, defeating the ends of justice, forgery and so on. We think it's a good step that SAPS take care of the rotten apples, deal with corruption, and we want to call really on SAPS to continue with that, to ensure that we get corrupt police officers out of the South African Police Service. So we welcome the arrest in KZN. Then we also have noted the visit of the President and the Minister to Elsies River yesterday, and also the handing over of a satellite station. But we also saw from media reports there was allegations by members of the community that there is police officers that is in cahoots with local gangs. Now, we believe that matter should be investigated by IPED in the Western Cape, as well as the police, to ensure that we get the confidence of the community. So if there's any allegations of people being complicit in crime, they must be dealt with. So we need, from the committee side, we need action there. Then we've seen also recently, and I think there's also tomorrow debate on the issue of violence against women and children. But we've seen also in the Stellenbosch case, the Langa case recently, and also Johannesburg case, that the detectives had made good progress. I mean, in the Stellenbosch case, the detectives were successful to apprehend the suspects very quickly, and also the Elsies River case. So I think it's good work done by the detectives, and they must continue with that approach. I think the committee appreciates the swift action by SAFT to act with good results, and that's very much welcoming. We've also seen in the Khayelitsha Regional Court a very good result against organized crime. the DPCI, a case that came from 2010, where 20 million rands worth of Parlemoon abalone was involved, and the four accomplices received the joint sentence of 127 years. So it's quite clear that organized crime, it doesn't pay, and it's very good that DPCI moved with effectiveness in that regard, so we welcome that. Then the last issue, last week, we raised the issue of the VIP protectors accommodation in Bloemfontein. And we've also requested a report within 7 days and also action. Now, the committee hasn't received any feedback on that matter, and we've passed the 7 days. So what we're going to do next week, we got that other joint meeting. But at 11 o'clock next Wednesday, we expect the Acting National Commissioner, the Divisional Commissioner for Program 1 and Program 5, as well as the Provincial Commissioner for the Free State, to join the committee, that we can interrogate the matter. It's not acceptable that there's no written report, there's no feedback from SAPS management. It's totally unacceptable. This matter has been on the agenda for more than 2 years, nearly 2 years, and the committee has expressed its deep concern about the matter last week, and there hasn't been proactive action, and that's totally unacceptable. So the national leadership will have to come and account for that. Any comments from members with regard to the introductory remarks? Onumbele?
Thanks again, Chair. I echo the sentiments of commending the successes we've had from the SAPS over the past couple of days. Just to make the point that obviously we would like that to be much more comprehensive, intensified, and less of sort of ad hoc, assuming that's the case. I don't know the full facts. But we'd like to see basically more effectiveness in that regard, because there are still major problem areas that I'm sure we can all point to from having done personal and committee oversights and just the complaints and reports we get from the public. On the issue of non-compliance with reporting deadlines, can I also add, Chair, that we just asked the Secretariat to the committee secretariat to just review the other missing reports. I remember there was mentioned in a previous meeting that there's information requests even from late last year that have not yet been complied with. And if I may suggest that certainly for the urgent ones, we then escalate that to the minister as well to assist with getting that going. Thanks, Chair.
Other members, Anwar Ramlakhani.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair and colleagues and the police management. I think we too we're happy to get those news. Actually, those news are not necessarily being kept as a secret, that the police is able to say this is the people who are doing this and we are cleaning up. So that's, I think, a commendable step. I just want to say that particularly in the Western Cape, that issue about gangsterism, organized crime, complicitness, compliant people who are working clandestinely with the gangs, I think it's a very, very important that the police pay attention to that. I'm saying this because I still remain concerned, Chair, that the reason, some of the reasons that you pick up on the ground is that Jeremy Verry, he's paying the price because of that battle, because of him taking a very firm stand against organized crime and people who collude with organized crime. So I think that I want to support the police, that they should actually leave no stone unturned on that. And of course, while I'm on that issue, it is now a quiet thing of those particular cases, I mean, we can speak about this issue because we know we live in this province. So I think that that general is listening. I'm remain concerned as to whether the Jeremy Very issue and the squashing of those cases that he was actually investigating, that of organized crime and the degree of collusion with the people, including allegations that politicians are involved. So I do want to say, Chair Walo, on that issue, that we should not be selective. We should deal with those issues without fear and favor. And I think at some time we would need to know how far did that matter go? What has happened? Has it been put under the carpet? Has it been squashed completely? Who is somebody responsible for it going forward? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other member? Thank you, honourable members. We then go to the business of the day. I'm just going to, I see Dr. Newman is also here. He's welcome to join us closer, maybe. I'm first going to ask SAPS, General Cruiser, to introduce his delegation. Then we will also ask the Statistician General if they already arrived, and also then the other role players. Yes.
Thanks, honourable chair and members. Our delegation as follows is Lieutenant General Zulu, Division of Research, Major General Sikakuni, the Component Head of Crime Register, Major General Rabi, the Component Head of Strategic Management, Brigadier Mashlangu from the Crime Register, and then you have Lieutenant Colonel Naika from Strategic Management, and myself, General Cruiser, Deputy National Chief of Management Interventions. Thank you, sir.
Dr. Newham.
Great. Sorry, I'm not a doctor. I'm just a minister, but thank you very much, Chair.
Stats SA already here? Not yet. And Dr. De Kok, our other presenter, not yet. Right, let's ask the honourable members to introduce themselves. Honourable Bele.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I'm Zakhele Mbele, member of the committee.
Goeiemôre dames en heren. My naam is NG Molewati. Ek is al lid van hierdie komitee. Baie dankie.
Dolibu wa mtula chiduro ndi na mabija libuhane, member wa hii komitee.
Morning ladies and gentlemen. My name is Pindile Mola, a member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Jerome Mage, a member of this committee.
Good morning. Welcome to Stats South Africa. You're welcome to introduce yourself. You're also welcome to come closer. But that's right. Yeah. Sure. So you're welcome to introduce your delegation.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. My name is Risenga Maluleka. I come from Stats SA. I'm a Deputy Director General at Stats SA. I'm representing the Statistician General. Harry Tema here is the Chief Director responsible for the National Statistics System. Thank you very much.
And we'll ask also that honourable member to introduce himself.
Good morning. My name is Leonard Ramatlakani, member of this committee.
Thank you very much. Maybe just a brief background and the reason for today's meeting. Over the last few years, the crime stats has come under much more scrutiny. Various issues have been raised by civil society research organizations. We also had in the past the Statistician General with us. And I think what is quite important, there should be absolutely certainty about the quality and veracity of and accuracy of crime stats. It must also reflect the picture on the ground. You can't have, for instance, a police station with few crimes while the general feeling and the atmosphere and the real crime that's happening is not consistent what's reflected on the CAS system. So there's a need to ensure that it's of high quality. And especially if there's a lot of swings in the crime stats from very low to very high in all categories, that raises certain questions of methodology. And as the portfolio committee, we need absolute assurance that we can rely on crime stats. And for instance, if there's tendencies that indicates indication there's the increase in crime, more resources should go to that police precinct. If there's a decrease in crime in a certain area, maybe fewer resources. So it's also a resource-based question that comes to the fore. And that's a major, I think, issue that we need to address this morning. Now, I think the Statistician General in the past said that the police statistics, of course, there's a memorandum of understanding, there is an improvement, and we want to reach a stage where they will get the quality assurance from the Statistician General as official statistics. We're not there yet, but I think that's what the committee wants, and we've also in the past indicated that in other jurisdictions, for example, in our tour in Northern Ireland, it's official statistics. And so that's quite critical that we get that today from today's engagement. So what we did, we invited two government institutions, SAPS and Stats SA, but also then two research institutions to get their view on it and then engage on the way forward. So we're going to start with South African Police Services, and then after that we will go to Stats SA. You're welcome, sir. Thank you, General.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think General Sikikuni will lead us in the presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll be taking you through the methodology that is used in the compilation of the crime statistics. The outline of the presentation is we will go into the introductions, methodology, how the data is collected, the data registration, the classification of crime, periodic stats, the crime computation statistics, and we will look at the data sources that are used to report on crime statistics, then touch a bit on the quality improvement initiative and also on the crime statistics management and policy enhancement that we have been able to put in place. First, I'll start with the mandate in terms of where does the mandate in terms of the crime statistics is derived from. This mandate that SAPS should produce crime statistics is derived from the interim constitution, that is section 218F of the interim constitution, 1993, Act number 200, which provides that, we quote, subject to the directions of the Minister of Safety and Security, the National Commissioner will be responsible for the keeping and provision of crime intelligence data, criminal records, and statistics. Now, in the finalized constitution, the above-mentioned section is retained in terms of item 24 of Schedule 6 of the constitution, that is Act number 108 of 1996. Now, in order to operationalize this mandate, SAPS developed what is called a National Instruction 3 of 2011, or if you don't want to call it a national instruction, it's what is called a standard operating procedure, Instruction 3 of 2011, which provides that the crime definitions to be utilized by police officials for purposes of opening case dockets and the registration thereof on the crime administration system or CASE/ICDMS, which is another alternative method of capturing information when dockets are being opened. Okay. The scope on which crime statistics is covered, it covers all the crimes that was perpetuated within the borders of South Africa. It's a concept almost similar to the gross domestic product, whereby the gross domestic product will measure all goods and services produced within the borders of a country over a specified period of time. Similar crime statistics cover all crimes that were perpetuated within the borders of South Africa within a specified period of time. The coverage is all crimes that are reported at the 1,144 police stations, including satellites and ports of entry, which are your airports, harbors, border posts, or land border posts, etc. Now, these crimes can be either reported by the victim or the witness to the crime, a third party, or can be detected when the South African Police Service members are conducting daily policing activity. And the manner of reporting is not confined to a victim walking into a community service center. They can also be reported telephonically, whereby a person sitting far from a police station simply calls a police station to report a crime when it is taking place. It can does not necessarily also have to be the victim. A witness to the crime can also report the crime. And a third party is an instance whereby when a mother discovers that her child might have been molested or something like that, then he acts as a third party and reports the crime on behalf of the aggrieved mind. Okay. Now when we look at the collection method, the whole crime statistics is derived from the CAS system or the crime administrative system, which is a live system, and it is updating on a continuous basis. When a case is reported to the police or when the police becomes aware of a crime that has been committed, the process will start with either a witness, a third party, or a victim walking into a service center or calling into a community service center, and he reports that he or she has been a victim of an identified crime or whatever. Then the police official will use a case docket, which is the very first source document which is being used when opening a case docket. He will then obtain what is called the first information of crime from the complainant. We will ask the complainant what had happened, where did it happen, how did it happen, who was involved, and all those things. Then he will then either read back the statement to the complainant, and once the complainant is satisfied with how the statement had been captured, he will then sign off on the statement. Once that is done, the CSC commander will then peruse the docket to ensure that the statement has been taken correctly, it is complete, that is before it is then registered on the CAS system. Now, this first statement of crime needs to satisfy four criterions. The first, it must satisfy the principle of legality, that is, it must constitute an offense. Second, it must have been perpetrated by a human being, or it can be perpetrated by an animal which is under the control of the human being. If that animal attacks based on the instruction of its handler, then the handler becomes responsible if that act is illegal. Then the third element, the unlawfulness or the conduct should contravene a statutory requirement or a common law rule. Then fourthly, we look at the culpability, whether the person who was doing that, was he acting intentionally or was it negligence. Then further, the person taking the statement will ask certain questions like who was involved, the victim or the perpetrator, when did the crime take place, where did it happen, how did it happen, and why was the person reporting the crime at the particular place. These additional questions are the questions that when we observe an identified phenomenon that we need to go in and delve deeper in terms of conducting research. We normally would look for the four whiskies in a hotel, the where, the how, the when, the why, and the how. We'll then use those mostly in cases whereby we further try to go into understanding the phenomenon that is being observed. And they are primarily used for research and analysis, for instance, to determine crime hotspots, the modus operandi that is being used, and also help in terms of the deployment of resources. Now, still on the methodology, we say that irrespective of when the crimes were committed, all these crimes that are reported to the police will be recorded. The reason why we say that is that the South African Police Service uses what is called input statistics, whereby whenever a person walks into a CSC to report a crime, that crime is recorded. Unlike in some other countries, whereby the incident is first captured in an incident report, and then some preliminary investigation is being conducted to determine whether that incident did indeed take place or not. And if it is verified that such an incident did take place, it is then recorded. But in the South African context, we first record, then investigation takes place, and once it can be determined that a crime did not happen, is that then it is closed off as unfounded. Now, when we say irrespective of when the crime were committed, a crime might have been committed in the previous financial year, but as long as the person has not reported it to the police yet, we will not be aware of it. It is only reported and recorded when it comes to the attention of the police, and then it will then be recorded as part of the statistics. Then we will then assess the elements of crime to ensure that the crime that has happened is correctly classified and is allocated to an incident. Then the number of counts associated with the identified offense are then determined, because in some instances there might be multiple offenses that happen in one crime scenario. For instance, a murder can take place with a burglary or a home robbery, car theft or hijacking, etc. So we will then determine how many counts of charges will the perpetrator be charged with based on a single offense or a single crime that has been committed. Then preliminary investigations and inspections on the incident are conducted to ensure that the reported crime is accurate and complete. Now, once that it is done from the case docket, then it is then transcribed from the hard copy case docket, is transcribed over to CAS. The information is then registered on CAS. Once it is registered on CAS, a case number will be automatically generated. In some instances, it will also be sent without any further interference by the CAS controller to the cell number of the person who has reported the case. Then again, the CSC commander again checks for the correctness and completeness of crime data on CAS against the information on the docket. That is, he checks whether what is on the docket is correctly what has been transcribed onto the CAS system. Then every person, like the CAS controller, once he has captured the information, he will then sign it off on the back of the docket that this information was captured by admin clerk or police member so-and-so. Then the CSC commander will also sign that he has verified that the information on the docket and what is on CAS has been correctly checked. So this is to ensure that each and every member through which the docket goes signs off to ensure that it has been quality checked, quality assured, etc. Now, once the CAS number has been allocated, we then allocate what is called a daily summary of serious crimes, because each charge will then be allocated a crime code. then from the crime code, these crime codes of a similar nature will then be aggregated to form what are called daily summary of serious crime codes. And then these DSCCs are the ones that are used for reporting of crime statistics. If we can go on to the DSCC, on the first column here, we have a DSCC that is for murder. It is DSCC code 01, and the offense code, which is unique, would be 31984 for murder, and then 31989 for murder of a police officer, and 31990 for farm murder. So, because these are all murders, these case codes are then grouped into one single DSCC code, which is the DSCC code for murder. And when we report for crime statistics, we report on the on all the murders, not on the offense codes themselves. So we aggregate the offense code into DSCC code, and these are what we report for when we report on crime statistics. Then the crime counting unit is that we use a charge, not necessarily a docket, and we say that a case docket may contain one or more charges, similar to the scenario whereby I had explained that a murder taking place with a rape, hijacking, etc., etc. Those are the charges, but they will be contained in one docket. And when we report for crime statistics, we use the charges that the perpetrator has been charged on. Then the released crime statistics represent the number of charges and not necessarily the number of case dockets. But it might happen that there might be a one-to-one relationship between a charge and a docket. If a person is only murder, then there will be one docket for murder. But if there are other crimes that happen within the same scenario, they will be in the same docket, but there will be a number of charges. Then the reason why we take the crime codes and group them into DSCC code is for us to be in a position to classify crimes and look at the broad categories of crime that we are reporting on. It's because we look at the crimes with the similar characteristics, and then they will then be grouped into one broad category, and also to clarify the nature of crime and facilitate the understanding of the various crime categories. And this also helps us in terms of developing policing strategies, especially focusing on problematic categories like your trio crimes, which are within the subcategories of robbery with aggravating circumstances. But because they are almost similar in the nature in which they happen, and remember the trio crimes is carjacking, robbery residential, and robbery non-residential. You find that the modus operandi in terms of how these crimes have been committed, it's also almost similar, and in most cases they might be even perpetrated by the same offenders. So we group them so that when we do the analysis, we can be in a position to tackle the trio crime together rather than individually focusing on a specific crime on its own. And the five broad categories in which we group these crimes are your contact crimes, which have been grouped based on the issue that mostly they are the crimes against the person. Then you again have the other category, which is the contact-related crimes. The other category is property-related crimes. Then we have other serious crimes. And then those are what we call the 17 community-reported crimes. Then we also have additional four categories of crimes, which are called the crimes dependent on police action for detection. Now, the breakdown into the 17 community-reported crimes. Under contact crimes, we have murder, we have sexual offenses, and the list for sexual offenses is very, very, it's a very long list, which includes your, the total sexual offenses would include your, I can't see it on my machine, it's made up of rape, it's made up of sexual assault, it also includes attempted rape and other contact sexual offenses. Together these four make up the category of total sexual offenses, and each has its own DSCC, etc. Then we have attempted murder, assault GBH, common assault, common robbery, robbery with aggravating circumstances, and in robbery with aggravating circumstances, I think we have around six types of crimes. The three I've already mentioned, which are the trio crimes. We then again have robbery of cash in transit, truck hijacking, bank robbery, robbery with weapon other than a firearm, etc. Then under contact-related crimes, we have arson and malicious damage to property. Then for property-related crimes, we have burglary at residential premises, burglary at non-residential premises, theft of motor vehicle and motorcycle, theft out of or from motor vehicle, stock theft, and then the other serious crimes, it's all theft not mentioned elsewhere, commercial crimes, and shoplifting. Then the four crimes dependent on police action for detection is your illegal possession of firearms and ammunition. Then we have drug-related crimes. Then we also have driving under the influence of alcohol and sexual offenses detected as a result of police action. Now, once the information that has been transcribed from the case docket onto the case system in a particular station, what will then happen is that all crimes that are recorded at the station within a particular cluster will then be added up, and these, when they are added up, should collectively add up to the total crimes that are recorded in that particular cluster, both in time and in space. That is, the crimes recorded at the four stations making up a cluster for a month should, when added up, add up to the total crimes recorded at the cluster that making up that station for that particular month. Then the crimes that are recorded at the cluster within a province should also similarly, both in time and space, they should collectively also add up to the total crimes in the particular province. Then the crimes recorded in the nine provinces, both in time and space, should also add up to the national total. So the national total is made up of all the total number of crimes that are reported at the province. The total number of province that are crimes that are recorded at the province is a summation of all the crimes that are reported at the cluster. The total number of clusters, crimes reported at the cluster, is the total number of the crimes that are reported in a particular police station. Now, on a daily basis, what happens is that the crimes that are reported at the particular police station, they are discussed on a daily basis in what is called the Station Crime Combating Forum, and on a weekly basis, they are discussed at the Cluster Crime Combating Forum. Now, the CIMEC person at the station, which is a member of the crime registrar, who's rendering a service at the police station but reporting directly to the cluster crime registrar, will on a daily basis advise the station management on the crimes that are incorrectly registered or incorrectly mapped or incorrect crime codes and the daily pattern analysis. Now, these daily statistics are used for operational planning and to direct the deployment of resources at the hotspots, etc. And these statistics are only distributed to internal stakeholders and are for operational purposes only. Now, on a monthly basis, the reported crimes are discussed at the Provincial Crime Combating Forum on a monthly basis. Then in the PCCF, the Provincial Head Crime Registrar also advises the management on crimes incorrectly registered, incorrect crime counts, and monthly crime pattern analysis. Then, at the national level, the National Crime Registrar will then draw a snapshot of all the crimes that are reported in the province to brief the NCCF on the crime situation. This is the snapshot comes in because CAS is a live system. So we want to have a snapshot of the crimes that have been reported as at a particular point in time. And we cannot stop people from registering cases because we want to have a statistics that is frozen or not. So we take a snapshot maybe at the end of the month or 7 days after the end of the month, and these statistics will then be kept frozen in the archive or so. But the registration of case dockets and others will continue on the live system. Then this snapshot is only taken once all the station crime information has synchronized on the CAS system. And then again, similarly, the monthly statistics will only be distributed only to internal stakeholders. Then on a quarterly basis, the reported crime is discussed at the National Crime Combating Forum and the National Management Forum meeting on a quarterly basis. Again, this is a snapshot. It's more like the concept of a balance sheet and an income statement, whereby you take a snapshot of the crime as at a particular point in time. Then you keep it aside so that you minimize the fluctuations as the crime are being registered and some are changing status, etc. You keep it at a frozen so that you can be in a position to then compare the previous quarters of the previous financial year to the current financial year. So this snapshot is also drawn once all the station crime information has been synchronized. The synchronization allows changes that had been taking place over the quarter to materialize. For instance, some of the attempted murders that in the due process of the investigation progressed to murders, etc. Some of the cases that had been committed in one police station precinct, but the victim report in another police station precinct to be then transferred back to the police station precinct where it happened. So in some instances, you find that a case happened in police station X, but it is reported in police station Y. So once it is reported in police station Y, it is then transferred back to where it happened, but it needs to be acknowledged by the recipient at the station where it happened. So we allow those changes to take place, and then we again take a snapshot of the quarterly crime picture. Then for this quarterly statistics, we compare the current financial year's quarter to the same period in the previous financial year. And these are the reports that we will normally go to the cabinet, JCPS cabinet, and then come and then share them with the Portfolio Committee on Police. So these are made public or they are disseminated to the public. Then at the end of the financial year, because we've been taking snapshots of the respective quarters, quarter one, quarter two, quarter three, quarter four. Now, what happens at the end of the financial year? Once all the changes to the crime has allowed to be performed, amended, cases that are reported incorrectly in police station Y, transferred back to where they are supposed to have been transferred and acknowledged by the other police station, etc., we then do what is called a redraw. The redraw will normally take place a month or two after the end of the financial year. This is to allow ample time for all these changes to be effected so that we know that the picture as at the end of the financial year has taken consideration of all the changes that might take place in terms of classification, registered at an area where it was not supposed to have been registered, transferred from one police station to the next, etc. So we allow these amendments to reflect in the annual crime statistics. Then normally when we come here to present the quarterly statistics, we will then alert you that these are preliminary figures because the redrawn figures, because they have been refreshed, changes have taken place, then it will also affect the quarterly crime statistics. So we then redraw also the quarterly crime statistics, and you find that they might differ from the frozen crime statistics. Again, once we have done that, cases that had been closed off as unfounded, that is in an instance whereby a hijacking case have been incorrectly registered, and then you find that at the end of the financial year or during investigation, the investigating officer determines that this car was not actually hijacked, but then maybe the husband, fearing to go home, he decided to tell the wife that I was hijacked, and then the police investigate and they discover that this was not actually a hijacking. Or in some instances whereby you find that a farmer reports stock theft, that maybe their livestock has been stolen, etc., but then you find that those stock had wandered into another farm without necessarily having been stolen, but just because he can't locate them at that particular point in time, he goes and opens a case of stock theft, and when the police investigate, they find that this stock had wandered into an adjacent farm, etc. So these cases will then be closed off as unfounded. So when we do the annual crime stats, to make sure that we report as accurately as possible, we then remove these crimes that have been closed off as unfounded from the redrawn annual crime statistics. Then once all these changes have been allowed to take place, the statistics are then used in the compilation of the annual crime statistics report, and this report is the one that will be disseminated to the public. Now, in terms of the computations that we normally undertake, because now of the collaboration that we have entered into with Status A, they have allowed to give us the mid-year population estimates on a quarterly basis. So we will use the mid-year or the population estimates when we compute our crime statistics on a quarterly basis. So they've given us actually the population estimates for the different quarters of the financial year. So we will use, for instance, the first quarter, which starts from April, May, June, we will use the midpoint of the month of May as the population estimates for the particular quarter to compute the crime rates. But these population estimates, they will only be used in instances whereby the crime is committed against the person. Because what you need to have there is to ensure that when you compute the crime rate, you need to ensure that both your numerator and your denominator are speaking to the same item or the same unit. For instance, murder is against a person, and then your numerator is a person, and both your denominator will again also be your population. We cannot use these population estimates to compute, for instance, crimes like truck hijacking, crimes like robbery, residential, non-residential, etc. So we will use these crime ratios, the main reason being that we want to compare equal portions of the population using the per 100,000. Because in some instances, you have those provinces which are small in numbers or they have a lower population. And when you use only raw numbers to compute the murders that have taken place in their respective provinces, those provinces with smaller population will always be perceived to be doing well because you are only looking at the raw numbers. But then when you do the murder rate per 100,000, you can then be able, can be in a position to compare equal portions of the population, you know, moving away from that this is a big province, this is a small province. Because honestly what that shows, it simply shows you the volume of the people in the province when you do murder just raw numbers for every province. It simply reflects the number of people in that particular province, and it's not really a good ideal way in which one can be in a position to measure the murder rate. So we will do that on a quarterly basis and on an annual basis per 100,000 of the population. And again, these crime ratios will only be computed only at the provincial level and at the national level. The reason is that the population estimates, when you try to take them down further from the province to cluster and stuff, they become unstable. And this is because of the issues that the station boundaries are misaligned to the enumeration areas that Status A use to compute these population estimates. Then the formula that you use to compute your crime ratio would be the reported crime figure at a particular point in time or over a period of time divided by the population size multiplied by 100,000. For instance, if you were to compute the murder rate for a province like Western Cape, your numerator there will be the total number of murders that have been reported in the Western Cape, then divide by the total population of the province Western Cape multiplied by 100,000. And for the national, you will take the total number of murders reported at the 9 provinces and divide it by the total population of South Africa to derive your 100,000. Then we also use the percentage changes whereby we determine if a crime has increased or decreased, and again we do the comparison based on equal periods. That is, for instance, if your past, you are doing quarter one, your past figure will be Q1 2008 and your current figure will be Q1 2009 divided by Q1 2008. That is the crime figure that was reported in quarter 1 2008 minus the current figure quarter 1 2009 divided by quarter 1 2008 to get your 100 per 100,000 or no, your percentage change for the particular crime figure. So this is one, when we come to the portfolio committee on a quarter-to-quarter basis, we show you the percentage change from quarter one to quarter two, quarter one, the different financial years, then we do the quarter twos, quarter three. In some instances, we do the semester or the trimester and also the annual percentage changes. Then once that is done, we have other subsystems which are normally used to extract some information. That is, if you want to do further analysis, etc., we have systems that can be used to extract additional information, like your efficiency index, your business, your BI, etc. Then the extracted information is restructured into a more presentable and a user-friendly format, for instance, using GIS or Geographical Information System and the Management Information System, etc. Then the CAS or SAP S6 is used to archive the synchronized reported data and data regarding case progress on a monthly basis. Then this information is provided to the crime registrar on a monthly, quarterly, annual basis, etc. So we get this information from the Technology Management Services Division of SAPS. And then the population estimates, because of the understanding or the memorandum that we have with the SSA, we normally obtain that information from Statistics South Africa. Now, collaboration with Status A, we have taken a number of initiatives to enhance the quality of crime statistics. And at the station level, we have the CIMAC personnel, who is a person reporting to the cluster crime registrar, provincial crime registrar, and ultimately to the national crime registrar. He conducts daily checks on the crimes that have been reported and registered in the previous 24 hours, and any discrepancies are discussed and rectified at the Station Crime Combating Forum. Then the Provincial Crime Registrar oversees the process and conducts quality assurance checks at sample stations. And then at the national level, the National Crime Registrar, the subsection quality assurance, perform same function, that is, they will then draw a sample of identified police station, and then they will physically go into those police stations, peruse those dockets, check whether the crimes have been correctly captured, correctly classified, correct number of counts, etc. And a report will normally be retained for discussion with the station management, and in some instances shared with the National Management Forum or the National Crime Combating Forum meetings. Then the technical working team was established, that is based on the memorandum of understanding between SAPS and Status A. And this technical working team normally do the quality assessments of the annual crime statistics prior to release, and also recommend implementation of the actions that need to be addressed to address quality issues and recommendations. And as we have observed, the previous two annual crime statistics reports were quality assessed, and the process was endorsed by the Statistician General. So currently what we are doing is we are developing policies and standards covering the whole statistical value chain of crime production. We have a policy that has been approved on crime statistics, and this is the policy that we have written that governs the production of crime statistics within the South African Police Service. Unfortunately, it's not showing on the screen. And we have also written a document called the Fundamental of Crime Statistics Analysis. This is the guiding tool that we intend to empower the CIMAC personnel at the station level, so that when they produce the crime pattern analysis, crime threat analysis, it should be used as a guiding tool, and also for the station commander to have a clear understanding in terms of what is it that he or she can expect from the CIMAC personnel in the particular stations. We are currently working on the draft annexures to the policy, which include your classification of crime for statistical purposes. This is in line with the International Crime Classification Standard of the UNODC, which we intend to adopt. What I can say at this stage is that we have finished classifying the crimes in line with the ICCS, but then we have handed the draft report to State SA so that they can do what is called a concordance of the ICC codes and map them to our DSCC codes so that the statistics that we'll be producing will be in line with those of the ICCS. Then we have also written the counting rule because the idea is to try and move more towards the victim-based counting rule rather than the charges, because that will also enable us to further do ratios on other crimes that we are reporting on. And I think towards the end of the month, we will be having a research symposium where academics, I think also members of the portfolio committee and other experts will be invited so that we can then be in a position to discuss and come to an agreement in terms of the classification of crimes and also the crime counting rules, which will then be adopted. But we have also made engagements with the JCPS DGs, whereby they agreed with the crime counting rule. So we will have a big symposium, maybe covering around 250 people, and also invite the UNODC, ICCS support group so that they can help us in making sure that we are appropriately aligned to the ICCS. We have also developed standard operating procedures for station products. We are currently working on a dissemination policy because we want to have a pre or an advance calendar whereby for every quarterly release, the people should know when is it expected to be published, not to be told on a month-to-month basis. So we will have that advance release calendar put on the SAPS website for the whole financial year or even cover the 10-year period or whatever. But the spanner in the works towards that is the process that we need to take before we ultimately come to the portfolio committee, because we will go to the JCPS cabinet, then we will go to the cabinet, then lastly we come to the portfolio committee. And it depends on whether these other meetings have a space to accommodate that agenda item in their agenda. So it is somehow dependent on the other committees before we can come to the portfolio committee. Then to also enhance the understanding in terms of how crime stats are being compiled, we have also written a crime statistics user guide, and I believe before the end of the current financial year, we will have that signed off. And we will also finalize the quality assessment framework, whereby we will take only those indicators from the South African Statistical Quality Assessment Framework that are applicable to the South African Police Service crime statistics, and then formulate our own quality assessment framework so that when we produce the crime statistics, we ensure that all the indicators that are covered within the SASCAF or our quality assessment framework have also been covered. And that is the end of my presentation on methodology for crime statistics.
Thank you very much, General. Anything to add from SAP's side? Right, let's go to Statistics South Africa. General, are you covered? Anything else? General Zulu? You're covered. Okay, Stats South Africa, DDG, you're welcome.
We're going to ask Harry to do our presentation, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. The presentation outline that I'm going to cover, it will just to give you a bit of a background where we're coming from, cover the Statistics Act, the improvement processes that we went through, which will include the SASCAF, and outline the phases of engagement and some of the activities that came from the national task team between Status A and SAPS, and what we have done and what we're still going to do. I think some of the things and some of the activities, I think General Skukwini covered some of them, but I'll also allude to that. Sometime in 1998, there was a crime statistics committee that was commissioned, and it highlighted some certain areas that need specific attention, mainly to improve the SAPS capacity to disseminate crime information, and also to look at the interventions for system improvements within the KSA, within the new operational systems for statistics, plus improved KSA for docket tracking and all that. In 2009, based on all the commissions that were done, there was a concept paper that was written looking at the whole crime stats. And it highlighted some certain areas of concern. But in terms of Status A responding to that so that we can start a process of working together, there were three broad areas that we looked at as Status A in order to improve the crime stats in South Africa. Was firstly to prioritize the quality and the capacity gap, which then will lead to the information improvement, information gap being closed in the end. So that was the sequence that we started since from 2009. But coming to the Statistics Act, the main purpose of the Act is more to advance planning, production, analysis, documentation, storage, and dissemination of official and other statistics, but mainly looking at the two broad areas where the production is happening within Status A, and the coordination is happening outside Status A. It also goes further to define the duties and the powers and the relationship between the minister, the statistician general, who's currently also the head of Status A, the Statistics Council, and it also outlines responsibilities of other ministers or other heads of organs of states, which is done in Section 14. But within the Act, for us to be in a position to can fully implement and coordinate the production of statistics within the country, there were certain enablers that we needed. So from the Act, you'll get the roles and the responsibilities that cover the coordination and the production. But we need the governance structures that needs to be formed, which will include the statistics units, the producer forums, the provincial forums, the user forums. We also need the statistical tools that will guide us in terms of setting the standards. Because with the Act and the statistical tools, you'll be in a position to set your standards. And that's where now the South African Statistical Quality Assessment Framework was gazetted. And we also have the statistical value chain that we follow for all the surveys. So a combination of all the regulatory environment, the governance, the statistical tools, that will give you the certification. But the statistical tools assist us also to give technical support to other statistical producers and also the information collection approval as well. Now, let's going into this improvement process. The statistician general was approached by SAPS in May 2011 to assist them on their road towards crime statistics eventually being accorded the status of official statistics. But we first need to understand the term statistics and the official statistics and its importance. The term of official statistics is defined within the Statistics Act and represent any statistics that have both satisfied the quality criteria of the statistician general and has been formally certified as official. While the legal term may suffice, in practice, official statistics have four main characteristics, mainly that it should be in the public domain, that it should be sustainable, not a once-off or an ad hoc collection, that an organ of state producing them is a member of the national statistics system. And they have to satisfy the quality criteria of the statistician general. But how do we determine that quality criteria? Does the South African Statistical Quality Assessment Assurance Framework that was gazetted, that is the one that will make sure that all the indicators, credible information on indicators, is attained within South Africa. So our integrated indicator framework has to go through this SASCAF for us to have credible information. It has 9 quality dimensions. The first one is more the prerequisites of quality, where you become a member, it's not a once-off and all that. But you also have timeliness, accessibility, integrity, accuracy, relevancy, interpretability, methodological soundness, comparability, and coherence. Within that, there are standards, there are indicators within each dimension. And like as General Skukwin was presenting in terms of the indicators that they have to be applicable, because some indicators might not be applicable to administrative, and some might not be applicable to the normal service. So the SASCAF covers both, so you have to select indicators that are more applicable to your processes. Now, in August 2011, the framework of engagement was adopted between StatsSA and the South African Police Services towards the collaboration. And this framework of engagement, it has 6 components, and the initial phase was to implement it over 4 to 6 years, because it also depends on the type of problems that you get once you start digging in. The first phase mainly, I'll go into the details of each phase, but the first phase is more the problem identification. The second phase, you do a diagnostic assessment. You develop your problem solution, you implement that solution, you do your own self-assessment, and then that's when the independent team comes to do the final assessment. Because this, it has helped us, because we have learned through the collaboration with the other statistical producers that without following this phase, you end up not being in a position to assist a lot of statistical producers, because we need to work together and walk the path together, unlike just coming in the end and assessing. So that's why we take you through the independent assessment only comes right in the end. Once you are also confident yourself that I've assessed myself, I know the SASCAF, and I'm in a position to get the official status. But as I say, we work with you through all the from phase 1 to phase 5. The phase 1 mainly is just to understand the problem independently of the owner, and we produce a problem statement, which will mainly entail the environmental scan or situational analysis with a reference to the relevancy to the policy outcomes, the skills that we have within the organization, your statistical unit, the number of people, your resources that you have, the infrastructure to support the whole statistical value chain from planning right up until the dissemination. And the output out of that is mainly the memorandum of understanding between StatsSA and the South African Police Service, and then we form the joint working parties, and then we produce the report. And I'll come to the achievement of all the phases when I'm done explaining these phases. The second phase is more when we do the diagnostic assessment, where you have to fully understand the input processes, output activities within the case, and we recommend improvements for those activities of the case. We look at the diagnostic assessment. It's mainly a reference to the statistical value chain, the rigorous process, the quality management, mainly to try and find what is the root cause. And the output of that is more than what we call the diagnostic mapping. So we do a process mapping of the SARS-CoV aligned with the statistical value chain. Then once you have done that, you need to come up with a solution. Together we sit and say, okay, no, these are the problems that we have identified, have an agreement improvement strategy covering all the phases. And that strategy, it will include the standards that needs to be developed, the systems that needs to be developed, and the strategy on operationalized through the development of the implementation plan. And the solution need to cover the whole improvement strategy from phase one right up until the last phase of the statistical value chain. So the main output out of this phase is more your improvement strategy and the implementation plan, because you have to prioritize to say, in some cases you might find that when you deal with one issue, it's solving three or four problems. But then the impact of that is very small. But you deal with one issue, the impact of that might be very big. So you need to prioritize based on your budget and the resources that you have. The fourth phase now is when now you implement your solutions. Based on the prioritization, they need to prioritize components of implementation strategy. Identify the role players to implement that strategy. And actually, basically, it simply says that you need to know what needs to be done, how and when. Now, the solution mainly cover the methods and the standards that needs to be developed, your metadata, your concepts, your definition. And that will lead to the improved quality of crime statistics. Once you've implemented those solutions, then you should be in a position to move to the next phase, which is your own self-assessment using the SARS-CoV. And within your implementation, you'll be giving yourself time frames to say, for this I'll need 2 years to implement because I need to come up with new stuff. Some of the things that General Skookun was presenting to say, people have been appointed, there are new standards that have been implemented. Those are the part of the path that we've been working together. But like in his closing statement, his last point about the self-assessment, which is where we are now in this phase number five, where now they need to determine whether their product is of quality by doing the process audit and the self-assessment. And then the output of this will be the self-assessment report and updated improvement strategy or plan, if there's anything that is still missing. But if they are happy, then that's when now the last phase is coming, where there's independent team that will come, which from status say it won't be us that have been working with them, it will be a completely independent team that will be assessing them independently and come up with a quality report and a quality improvement plan, which then they will recommend to the SG for them to give them an official status. But let me just now, after explaining the phases, take you through on some of the things that happened within those phases. The national team test team was formed where STATS and SAPS in 2011 were participating. There were, among other issues, there were about three main issues that were brought in. The issues of the police on the management of crime information, the counting rules, the margin of error in the recording of crimes. There were some study tours that were taken together by STATS and CPS to try and understand these things much further so that together we can come up with solutions. And based on the inputs and the research and the development of policies began. That's where now the draft of the crime statistics, you know, the counting rules, you know, the discussions, the consultations started happening. In 2015, that's when the MOU was signed, and with that, that's when the introduction of the clearing process by the Statistician General was started, where the annual clearing process of the crime statistics publication was done, and also the technical working team was established so that we can work together. In 2014-15, there were six dimensions that we looked at. Remember, I talked about the nine dimensions of the SASCAF. We looked at the six dimensions, and the Statistician General's recommendation was endorsing the crime stats publication and encourage its use by the stakeholders. In 2015-16, we looked at the remaining three dimensions, and its assessment of the publication taking into account the recommendations of the clearance committee endorsed the 2015-16 crime statistics publication and encouraged its use by stakeholders. Now, where are we now in terms of those phases of engagement? We are currently in phase number five, where now the output of this will be the self-assessment report based on the selected indicators that are applicable to the administrative data, which is the crime statistics. And based on the assessment, then there will be some recommendations or improvement plans that are coming out. If maybe some of the standards, like as you mentioned, there were some standards that are still being developed, they're still going to be finally approved. So that will be the plan that is coming out of that. And then from there, with that report, then that will take it to the next phase of the independent assessment, where a quality report and the improvement plan is made by an independent team.
Chief Director, just for clarification, I just want to know, time frame-wise, how long can one be in the self-assessment phase before you graduate? I just want to get a sense of that.
Okay, I'll come to that one in my closing slide. One of the things on the way forward as well, which I think General Skukwini spoke to that as well, it's more the international classification of crime for statistical purposes, which we are working together. But I think what I need to highlight on our side is more the process that we have to undergo it so that we can adopt it with our South African situation, the domestication process of it, because we can't just take it on as it is. That he spoke to it as well. And one of the things that will assist on this, if this is adopted, it will facilitate the data integration throughout the value chain, from the South African Police Service right up until the Correctional Service. And it will contribute to the promotion of data sharing, as well as enable statistical data to be comparable across, because now we can be in a position to have the same coding. Now, in summary, to say where are we now, as you can see, 2011 we have established the task teams, the TOS and the diagnostic assessment were done. 2013 there were the review of the counting crimes and some of the policies. 2015 the MOU was signed, the development of the committees, the clearance committees were formed, and the assessment of the two publications, the 14-15, 15-16. Current where we are in 2017, for us, for the self-assessment, it depends on the stakeholders to say how long it will take for them to finish this. But then the time frame that we have, we put it for 2017. And then the next phase going forward from 2018 going forward, it will be the independent assessment based on the report that they have and also the implementation of the ICC. Yes. But then General Skukwini will have to confirm how long are they planning to do the implementation.
Question time we will utilize for that.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Mr. Hans, thank you. We appreciate it. The next presenter will be Mr. Newham. Gareth, thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I just gave my presentation to somebody to go and get it printed. They asked for it, but they've got the presentation on there. Okay, great.
The presentation will be handed out, but in terms of time, let's continue with the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. It's an honor to have been invited before the committee to give a presentation here today. I do have it on the memory stick, and hopefully it'll arrive. I gave it about 20 minutes ago to have copies made, so I thought I'd have it back by now that I could put it in there, but unfortunately not yet. So when it arrives, hopefully I'll be able to show it up on the screen. I'm going to very briefly respond to the invitation I got, which is to speak a bit about how we get crime statistics, but I think that's been largely covered here today, so I won't go into that too much. I'll speak a bit about why crime statistics cannot be scientific, what are some of the key challenges from our perspective, and how do we think that crime statistics can better be used to support community safety. So I think the idea is that from users, ourselves as an organization that is involved in research, we try and understand the crime trends and patterns, not just nationally and provincially, but also at quite a local level. We're doing a lot of work in trying to develop violence intervention projects in high-risk communities. And so in order to really understand the dynamics around why there might be a high murder rate or rape or assault taking place, we generally have to do our own research to get the dynamics right, because obviously the statistics don't give you that kind of level of detail. But I think there's a lot that can be done to provide that information that the police can gather to people like ourselves, academics, and others. And I think there's a lot of scope to improve collaborations so that we jointly use the information that the police have to better understand and develop interventions to try and tackle the issue of crime in South Africa. So I think from our perspective, it's important that we look at how to, first of all, recognize that the crime statistics reported to the police cannot be scientific. And that's not unique to South Africa. No crime statistics anywhere in the world can be scientific or seen as a scientific measure of crime. In other words, a clear high level of validity and reliability that the statistics that the police gather anywhere here and anywhere else will be an accurate reflection of the amount of crime in any given community. And that's because people don't report crime for a variety of reasons. Sometimes there's recording errors, and there's a whole range of issues. So you do need to have other kinds of mechanisms like the Statistics South Africa National Victims of Crime Survey to give you a better sense of why, what is that dark figure look like? What's been reported and why not? And we know that, for example, there's big discrepancies across the different crime categories. According to the most recent crime victimization of crime report, about 32% or 33% of people who said that they were a victim of property crime also reported to the police. So almost 70% of people who have something stolen from them don't report this to the police. When it comes to things like most robberies or total levels of robberies, street robberies, it's less than half of people, 44% of victims said they reported to the police. And then certain crimes like hijacking and murder go up into the sort of 80 and 90%. And often there's issues to do with insurance claims and that, which is why people report. So you can't really expect that people are definitely going to report all kinds of crime. And then also we've seen from the Victims of Crime Survey that there are different trends in the various categories. So, for example, the trends for sexual offences have declined quite significantly. Since 2013-14 until last year, the proportion of victims of sexual offences who said to the surveyors of the SATSA's survey that they were a victim, the proportion that reported has declined by 31%. So that's quite a big reduction in victims who are now coming forward and reporting that case to the police. And so when you see big reductions in, for example, rape and sexual assault in the police figures, it could very well be. Not that there's a real decline in the actual incidence of these cases. It's just that larger numbers of victims are not coming to report them for various reasons. We've seen a similar thing with assault. And so, we must be careful about saying that the police are doing a good job or a bad job simply on whether the crime statistics are going up or down. The most accurate crime statistics are murder, because there's independent verification, there's bodies, and some of the more violent and serious crimes, such as house robberies or business robberies, cash and transit heists, where there's other organizations that pay out claims and keep data on this, and we've seen similar kind of trends in those statistics as opposed to what the police give, so there's no discrepancy. We also need to recognize that different communities will report at different rates as well. And there's been a Western Cape community survey that shows that a simple thing like people's access to a police station, how easy they perceive it is to go to a police station in terms of getting there by public transport, will also correlate with the proportion of the community that actually reports crimes. So in Cape Town Central, for example, there's a much higher reporting rate in that survey than there were in places like Khayelitsha or Harare, where people didn't think that it was easy to get to the police station. So even when you look at local crime statistics, whether crime's going up or down, it could be independent of the police. And I think that leads me to one very important point that we've been saying for years now, and we'll continue to say, that except for very exceptional categories in particular kinds of crimes, we should not be using the crime stats as a measure of police performance. We should be looking at what the police do in terms of what they can, keeping their control. In other words, arresting people and making sure those cases go to court, how they behave towards the public, how they utilize their resources, the number of roadblocks and things they hold. Those are things they can control, and that's what you should measure their performance on. In very few circumstances, such as aggravated robberies, where a relatively small number of repeat offenders do the same crime over and over again, and good policing can reduce that crime significantly. And we've seen this from international studies, and we've seen this from South Africa's own successes in certain areas in the past against hijacking in Gauteng, and successes that are taking place now under interventions by the National Intervention Unit, that the police can be very good at certain kinds of crimes and reducing those crimes. But we must be able to identify those specific categories and then use those as measures of police impact. For example, the overall assault rate, the overall murder rate, and the overall rate of sexual offences is not something that you can expect the police alone to reduce. And right now, in that police's strategic plan, they are expected to reduce these crimes by 2% a year. So, 10% over 5 years. And that's just not a realistic expectation. And it results in the kinds of situation we find where police stations at a very local level, we get really good reports of this, people go and try and report a crime, and there's a great resistance, reluctance from the constable behind the desk to open a docket, because they don't want to see their stats going up, because it makes it look like they're not doing work. And then we don't get the accurate picture of crime as much as we could get. So I think that's a key issue we need to look at. I think when we're looking at utility, we do need to see a lot more or clarity on the kind of data that gets shared by the police, because the amount of information the police have on the cars and other systems is incredibly detailed. So it might not be all the crime in a certain place, but for example, if you want to really reduce murder in a given community, you need to understand who the victims are, who the perpetrators are, what are the root factors causing murder in that particular community. It could be gangs, it could be intergroup conflict, taxi violence, it could be robberies. We've seen big increases in the numbers of murders, rapes, and assaults associated with robberies. It could be great increases in interpersonal violence. Now, each of those drivers require different and more specified local response if you're going to see real reductions. And so that information, we need to see clear policies and what the police are able and willing to share with institutions are involved in doing research and wanting to develop interventions and not, so that we're not all just stuck with the crime stats as they're released. It's great that they've been released more regularly, frequently, but in order for those regular releases to be useful to communities and other organizations that are trying to understand increases in crime and respond effectively, we've got to see, for example, that they release regularly at the same time, almost like the first day of each new quarter, the crime stats are on the police website, they're in the client service center. So the communities can go in on the web or into a community center and say, okay, we have now a problem with increased street robberies, or we have a problem with business burglaries. They can then independently start looking at how can they develop an intervention in that community with their local resources, and then within a quarter they can see whether they're having an impact. Is that intervention working or not? But you need regular, consistent releases at a local level. I think the quarterly releases at the moment largely at a national and provincial level. So that local level utility needs to make sure that those crime stats are released at a local level so people can see what's happening in their communities. And in addition, it would be incredibly helpful, and this is done in some other places, where you use a map, for example, to say, in this precinct, this is where the hotspot for street robberies is. This is where the hotspot for car hijacking or business burglaries or residential robberies or burglaries is. Because the precinct data itself doesn't tell you. You know, and you get within a certain precinct, it could be a number of different communities. The Hillbrow precinct, for example, in Gauteng, you know, overseas parts of Houghton, Braamfontein, and Hillbrow, and each local area is very different in terms of the crime profile from each other. So if a basic map could say, well, what are the key crime issues that this community is worried about, so that you could see where you need to put your intervention. That would be very, very useful and helpful in that regard. And I think we very look forward to the consultation, and we welcome the initiatives around the new policy in place and discussions around that, new counting rules. Those are critically important, because counting rules really help the police understand what they're recording and how they're recording it. You know, and I think that we are coming off quite a high base. If you look at South Africa's crime statistics internationally, we've probably got the most sophisticated system as it currently exists in Africa and compared to many other middle-income or developing countries. So it's great that we're not starting afresh. I think there's been a huge amount of work, and these recent initiatives are certainly to be welcomed from our side. Of course, all the issues to do with making sure that the crime statistics are being captured the way they should be captured is a huge issue, because I think there has been a culture over time, certainly at a station level, as I said, not to want to capture statistics because it makes you look like you're not doing well, and that cultural change has to take place. And therefore, we need to see not only negative incentives. In other words, if you don't capture crime correctly and you don't record crimes the way we're expecting you, according to policy, we're going to punish you, but positive incentives. If you're victim-centric towards the way you collect data, and we see that a station is taking this approach and the crime stats going up, that we actually go in to look at that and say, is it really an increase in crime, or are the community now coming forward more likely because the police have said to them, please come and report crime, we need to know what's going on. So we must be careful about not making blanket assumptions about whether the crime's going up or down and saying, this is bad police or good policing, as I said earlier. I think for very important data that does need to be shared with people involved in either trying to develop interventions or better understand are things like who the perpetrators, who the victims. Some of that stuff is in the most recent crime report, which I think is a very comprehensive report, and you can see a great analysis being taken place there. But as I said, we were in a meeting with UNODC yesterday looking at trying to develop youth crime prevention programs, and I want to understand which communities to work in. We can't just quickly say, well, this is a great community because this is where we see a high level of youth crime taking place and you must be work there. The police will have that kind of data. So I think one of the key recommendations we would make is having some kind of national forum or even provincial forums where organizations that want to get additional data from the police, and this could also include weapons, what weapons are being used and what kinds of crimes, whatever the information is that people might want in order to better understand the problem and respond to it, there should be this forum where the academics, research institutions, people involved like UNODC or trying to involve in crime prevention initiatives can get together with the police and then agree on what data is available and how can that data be made available for the research purposes, which would also benefit the police. We've seen the development of the National Research Division, which is a very welcome development. We've had good interaction with them. And they would also benefit from all this research that if they gave the data, people could go use the data to run analysis and give a feedback. It would also not only help those institutions trying to understand the crime problem, but I would believe also enrich the police themselves. So I kept my presentation quite short. A lot of what I had in my presentation, you'll see, has already been covered by the police and by Stats SA. But again, thank you very much for the invitation to present to the committee. I'm very happy to take questions, and thank you again.
Thank you very much for coming. Our last presenter before tea will be Dr. Christa Kok, independent researcher. Thank you, Doctor. You're going to put it on the screen. Thank you very much. come around, Kwanku. We kept all the presentations until you arrived, so we will start now. Right, thank you very much, members. Dr. Cook, you're welcome.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and members, and thank you very much for the opportunity to address you. Now, I had the opportunity to listen to all the other presentations, I believe, and that makes my task much easier. I think you have received this last week already, and I will, through some slides, I will just jump those slides because actually I think it was spoken to. Here and there I will highlight certain issues. Now, if I can go here, I'm not going to spend too much time. This is a little bit of a CV. My background, maybe the reason why I'm here, is I headed this unit that produced crime stats for 18 years. Before that, I was a researcher at the Human Science Research Council for 20 years. During my period at the police, I did a lot to develop the CIAC, the crime information analysis capacity at station level. And then also very important maybe is that I were on three committees. Actually, I, on and off, I sit on committees for 5 years, looking at the stats, the integrity of the stats, how we can improve the integrity, how we can improve stats in general. Of those, it started off the Orkin Committee in 96, 97, shortly after I've joined the police. It went through to what I call the ILOF task team, which was also the moratorium on crime stats. You will remember, Honorable Chair, that there was a time which we referred to the moratorium on crime stats. If you go to some stations, they will still refer to the moratorium on crime stats, but actually it's not there. It was only there for a nine-month period from roughly about July 2000 to May 2001. And then what I will refer to, people don't know it under that name, but what I refer to as, just to bring it in line with the others, the Petros Committee, which was the last committee which was referred to by General Sekokuni and by other people here. I also served under four ministers because the ministers play a very important role. They up to now had the prerogative of the release of crime stats. It was always a case that the minister actually decide when crime stats should be released and all of that. Now that have implications for the validity of crime stats, but I'll come to that later. Okay, now I'm retired, but I'm an independent analyst. I will stay analyst as long as my health allow it. Okay, I'm not going to spend too much time on the following slides because I think it was already referred to here. Maybe I should just, maybe, because it, maybe it wasn't made very clear, that In South Africa, we have basically crime incidents. You have often a singular crime occurring, a rape or a murder or a robbery or whatever. But there's also a lot of that which are crime incidents. I mean, just in the past 24 hours, there was an incident where a group of 20, 25 people robbed a shop. They killed the manager. They robbed everybody in that shop. Now, that brings us to the incident. Now, how do you categorize those crimes? In which categories are you going to put them in? How are you going to count those crimes? Now, the categories of crime that we have in South Africa is actually defined by common law. I mean, murder is defined in common law, and it is in what we say in the police, we refer to the Yellow Book. I don't know if the Yellow Book is still there, but I believe it will still be there, which is a definition, a book full of definitions, and it was written by a legal expert, by one of the legal people in the police, and whenever the police must decide on which crime, they look at the elements of the crime, and they will then say, here in this incident, a murder occurred, of an attempted murder, a robbery aggravated, and whatever. But those categories are what I call the crime categories. Then there's also subcategories, which is not defined in law. Strictly speaking, in law we only find aggravated robbery. We don't find a carjacking in law. We don't find a truckjacking in law. We don't find all of these other subcategories. Now, the same apply to murder. I mean, one of the biggest debates is always about farm murder, so-called farm murders, because there's actually another word to describe it with. But farm murders, there's only in the law book, there's only murder. But there are actually different kinds of murders, and that, to me, is subcategories. And then we have types of crime. Now, types of crime are the broad types. This is what the police refer to contact crime, contact-related crime, what General Sekhukhune have presented to us, property-related crime, crime dependent on police action, and so forth. Those are broad types where we look at the essence of the crime and we classified it. I mean, I was very much part of that when I joined the police in 1995. They used some different types then, and we have changed it over the years. Now, I just want to quickly say, there is a few dilemmas when it comes to aggravated robbery, sexual offenses, rape, murder, and so on. Because one of the dilemmas that I have is that these, in many of these crimes, there are not these subcategories. You only have a category which is called sexual offenses. It includes a whole list of sexual offenses. But when you come to one of those, the most important one, the one which actually cover 80% of your sexual offenses, you come to rape. Rape, which is one of the most serious of your sexual offenses. And this covers 80, it contributes 80% plus of your cases. And we don't have any subcategory gang rape. A rape within a family circle, a boyfriend-girlfriend rape, a rape by a stranger. We have no other subcategories than that. When we come to aggravated robbery, we have got the true crimes, and we have got a few others. We have got basically six. If I can quickly mention them, carjacking, truckjacking, house robbery, business robbery, or residential, non-residential, we have got CIT and we have got bank robbery. But we actually don't have a subcategory called street public robbery. We calculate it by taking these others and then subtract it from the robbery aggravated. And strictly speaking, you can even go further and identify more and more robberies, because usually in the newspaper you will read about mall robberies. Now, that's something that the media came up with, a mall robbery. What is that? Is that mall robbery a CIT, or is it a bank robbery in the mall, or is it a business in the mall, or is it people within the mall? Now that is very important to understand crime, because all of those subcategories is very important when you want to fight crime, when you have to work out strategies of crime. I mean, your strategy to prevent gang rape will be quite different from your strategy to prevent boyfriend, girlfriend rape within a relationship. I mean, there's quite a bit of a difference there. And some of those rapes can be prevented much easier by the police. Some the police can basically do nothing about. The same apply to murder. I mean, murder within the family circle, murder between intimate partners, the so-called femicide. Again, it's very difficult to do something except after the fact, after the case was discovered or registered. But there's other murders which is a result of vigilantism, murders which is a result of robbery, which there should be a strategy to counter those. I mean, those can be prevented by the police, or at least they can try to prevent it. Now, then there's also counting rule dilemmas. Now, when I left the police, there was still an outstanding issue on what I call the Petros Committee, and that was the whole issue of how do you count rape. It is actually a very difficult thing to count. How do you count a gang rape? Do you count the number of perpetrators? Do you count the number of victims? Or do you count the number of penetrations? Which is strictly the correct way according to the law. Now that issue was still outstanding. I don't know if General Sekukuni can enlighten us later if that issue was resolved, and it will be resolved in the counting rules, in the final counting rules, because I think it's a very important, and it can affect the figures quite dramatically. Murder, I think that one was resolved, but murder, you also have to remember, that's the only crime where we count, literally count the bodies. And then aggravated robbery, the example that I've just mentioned, which happened in the last 36 hours, where a shop was robbed, a whole group of people went in there and they killed the manager. They robbed all the people in the shop and they robbed the shop. How do you count that? Do you count it as individual aggravated robberies, business robberies, street robberies? How do you count it? Okay. I'm actually not going to talk about...
Sorry to stop you here. We're going to just take a 10-minute tea break, members, 10 minutes, and then we come back for Dr. De Kock to continue. 10 minutes. Thank you, members. Thank you.
going to pay you.
No, I'll pay yourself.
Thank you.